it's Wednesday morning. That is true. Yeah, sometimes you do miss people, sometimes you don't. Well, we do miss this fellow who's about to join us now because it's just not the same without him, of course, because he was unique to the station. He was there from day one. But he's not here anymore, but he threatens to be part of it every now and then. And that's good for us because we get to catch up with him. He's on the other side of the world as we speak. He is currently, I believe, in New York and a very popular man on the station. Louis Herman Watt, good morning to you. What's the time actually in New York as we speak, mate?
Smithy, lovely to catch up. Nice to check back in. I always said I wanted to keep in touch with you fellas, so nice to touch base. It's just gone 5 o'clock here in New York, and we're just about to jump on the tube and head to the airport to head off to Spain. So that's what we're up to. But I've been here for the better part of 4 or 5 days over the weekend, and gee whiz, I've taken in some sport, a little bit live, but mostly just through the screens and the sports bars. And I thought you would be bloody interested to hear a little bit about the kind of atmosphere that this city has. It's one of the great sporting cities, I reckon.
Well, you're right. It's the hub of a lot of things in life, but particularly in terms of sport, because, of course, you've got the Yankees there and you've got the Knicks going pretty well.
Yes. So the Knicks, they reckon that last night was the best playoff moment for the New York Knicks in 25 years. I don't know if you managed to catch it, but an unbelievable finish. And both games actually on the TNT doubleheader, because there was a game winner in the Denver game on the other coast, or in Colorado, Jamal Murray hitting a dagger over Anthony Davis to go 2-0 up there. But here in New York, I mean, the Knicks have been... And the Knicks fans have been long-suffering. Here's an organization that's, they reckon James Dolan would be, one of the worst owners in world sport. And they've kind of been in kind of sporting purgatory for so long, like stuck kind of on a bit of a hamster wheel. And they had the Carmelo Anthony experience over the last part of a decade, and that was fun. They had his 65 in the garden or whatever it was. They had the Jeremy Lin, the Lin Sanity episode. That was fun. They had his 38 in the garden or whatever that was. But never really any sustained playoff success going back to Patrick Ewing in the 90s. So last night, they had a game winner, which was, you kind of got to see it to believe it, an amazing offensive rebound at the death, kicked it back out. Dante DiVincenzo gets a second chance at putting a dagger three down, and he does. And Madison Square Garden went absolutely berserk. I didn't cough up the $650 New Zealand dollars to be there, and I kind of regret it because it would have been something that you never forget. Courtside, you got Johnny McEnroe, you've got Selena Gomez, you've got Ben Stiller, Stephen A. Smith, and the whole place was rocking. And Jalen Brunson, you see a lot of Jalen Brunson New York Knicks jerseys around here on kids when you're walking around, and I think he'd probably be going close to the city's biggest sporting star at the moment.
So that is the average price, $650, or was that a late fee?
No, that's a playoff, round one playoff game at MSG. That is exactly what it would be, about $650 New Zealand when you put on the kind of ticketing fees and tax and stuff, anywhere between $600 and $700. Now, I met a guy leaving the Yankees game on Sunday who had gambled and bought a ticket for round two, game two at MSG, and he had paid $850 US for game two of round two. So that's what you're paying at the moment. And interestingly, I would have thought that the NHL playoff game, so the Rangers are the best, they had the best record in the NHL regular season, and their round one's going on at the moment concurrently at MSG. Tonight they play there, so they kind of go one for one. And those tickets are exactly the same. So to get into the garden, where they reckon is the best arena in world sport, that's the price you've got to cough up, Smithy.
Incredible. What about price tickets for a regular season game of the Yankees? How hot a ticket is that?
Now, affordable. Baseball is affordable here in the States, and even out at Yankee Stadium, and the Mets as well. They're affordable tickets. The Mets, where they play, it's really close to the US Open tennis, but the Yankees, so you go up to the Bronx. I think we got two tickets for about, pretty cheap. It was about $60 USD. So, yeah, that's pretty cheap. and they were fantastic. What I put poor Shannon through, Smithy, and trust me, she did love it, but what we put her through is we actually got tickets with the bleacher creatures, like the Yankees supporter base, like the fans. Mm. And I have never in my life experienced fandom like that. I'm talking like bleed Yankees, you know, true blue New York fans that turn up. And it was a Sunday and it was a 1 p.m. game. So Yankee Stadium was probably about 4/5 full. It was amazing. They were playing Tampa Bay. The series was 1-1 at that stage. And on a Sunday, you had a bunch of kids out because it's spring break. And man, like when the team is getting called out and once the game has started and you know, they set up in their fielding position, they're fielding first in the first innings, the Yankees, the fans around the stadium have individual chants for individual players. They go all the way from catcher to first base, to outfield, then back to first and around the bases before they get to the pitcher. Every player has an individual chant that the fans have created, and they do it until the player turns around, recognizes them, puts their hand up in the air, gives a wave. Aaron Judge turns around and kind of flexes his muscles. The bleacher creatures go crazy. I've never experienced athlete fan connection like that. The only thing I compare it to, and I've never been to an EPL game live in the flesh in the UK, but there's a hint of Aussie rules football to it, that tribalism and that connection between fan base and athlete. But these guys and girls and families out here that turn up to the Bronx for all of those regular season games, like they love the Yankees like a family member. It was quite surreal to see.
So did you walk away? I mean, you know, all the time that you were working with us, one of the big bugbears in New Zealand stadiums is cost, value for money. Did you walk away? Because it was a one-off, it's a bit hard to judge, but did you say it was an expensive 3 to 4 hours or not?
I mean, you know, you can get your big cans of Modelo and all sorts of beers and Coronas, whatever. And you know, it is. America's an expensive country. And like, I felt like this. We went to a Chicago Bulls game at United Center as well. And that was just a random Monday night. And we couldn't believe the amount of families there that were all buying the popcorn and the hot dogs. And we kind of thought, geez, like, these just look like working class families. But it is expensive. But it's kind of the culture, you know, Smithy. It's just kind of is what they do here. They eat out a lot. Like, it is just part of it. You pay for it. Like, this is the family's thing. And I guess some people are priced out, but the people that are there just kind of accept it for what it is. I think on the stadium experience part of it, I mean, like, the way that New York is set out with the subways and generally just the way the infrastructure is set up that I've noticed here, it was the easiest getting in and out of a stadium I've ever had. And there was, you know, probably 40,000 people there, and it was cruisy. It felt safe the whole time. But the atmosphere, I just wonder, do you think that maybe our atmosphere and sporting events and stadium experiences, which is pretty flat, let's be honest, back home, do you think it's in part because the athletes are a little bit insular? Like, I'm here, and there's a former player for Randy, last name I forget, who plays for the Rays, who used to be a Yankee. And the guys and girls and kids are absolutely into him, like into him. You know, nothing crossing the line, but, you know, like into him the whole game. He's playing center field and just hounding him, booing him, kind of jeering him. And it's like that even, you know, they turn on, you know, there's a player for the Yankees who's in a bit of a rough form patch. Just into him, just absolutely into him. And I think that, you know, We kind of, maybe New Zealand's a small place, and when you turn and you kind of be critical of athletes or you try and shout something at a sporting game, often you get that, you get the side eye, or, you know, the athletes, they don't typically like it. And I wonder if that's part of why our atmosphere is kind of a bit waning. I think that the athletes here, for the most part, they just accept that they get paid big bickies, like huge money, and they are in the public eye, and they are there to be booed or cheered. And that's probably what makes it so good when you have a moment like the Yankees did, where they win 5-4, and the game got a little bit tight, and then all of a sudden, you know, that they turn around, they do a big wave, they cheer with the crowd, and then they play Frank Sinatra, New York, New York, and the whole stadium stands there and sings it. Like, that's what makes it so good. So I did wonder that.
Right, okay. We see, walking around any city in New Zealand, you will see New York Yankees caps. There's no doubt about that. Probably one of the most popular sporting caps in the world. But I ask you this. Seen a Waz jersey in New York?
I haven't seen a Waz jersey. I've been wearing my Waz cap, Smithy. I've got one, and I've been wearing it hoping that someone's going to spot me. I did see, I was at the 9/11 monument, which is just unbelievable, so sobering. And there was an All Blacks jersey kicking around there, so we gave a nod of the hat to that. But no Waz, that was quite alarming. I was listening to Sammy and Blake the other morning, very early actually, and I thought we were looking pretty good, and gee, that kind of slipped away very quick. So that was disappointing. No worries. One thing, after the Masters, when I last spoke to you, obviously Scotty Scheffler hung on that day. He's then come out, right, and you've followed this no doubt over the weekend, and he's absolutely pulled their pants down at the RBC Heritage. So his last five events, Scotty Scheffler, Smithy, he's got the Arnold Palmer, the Players, first, second at the Texas Children's, first at the Masters, first at the RBC Heritage, $16 million US in winnings over 44 days. And I'm a bit shocked that that's not a bigger deal in American mainstream sport. It's all playoffs. It's all hockey, basketball, obviously a bit of baseball, and then an NFL draft. I kind of think that they might be sleeping on Scottie Scheffler. I don't know what it's like back home, but this is the closest thing we've got to Tiger Woods at his pomp, like since. It really is. His ball striking numbers and his winning numbers, like his kind of strokes gained on the field over this time, it's freakish. And I kind of think that might be going under the radar a little bit. I mean, he is a superstar, and he's maybe it's just because he's kind of like just flatline. He doesn't really care. He just wants his you know, wife to give birth, and so he's a total family man. But that's an amazing story over here.
Well, how far deep into the New York Times would you have to go to find out about Nellie Korda then having won five in a row?
Oh, well, I mean, that's interesting, isn't it? Because talk about freakish, and you probably, well, maybe in the New York Times, it might be in front of Scotty Scheffler, Smithy, if you know what I mean. But in some papers, it's probably wouldn't be. But, you know, I mean, that's an amazing story in itself as well. She's on an absolute heater, and yeah, she's kind of gapping the field at the moment. So it'll be interesting to see what, you know, what she does from this point, and if she can keep winning majors. Lydia probably, she's one point away from this Hall of Fame, and you kind of wonder, don't you, with Lydia, when she gets this Hall of Fame nod, how much longer? I saw that she was promoting the Olympics when she was in Paris, so she's got the Olympics in her. She's gonna make this Hall of Fame. You wouldn't be completely shocked to see her pull pin after that, would you?
You wouldn't be. She's aiming, of course, for a gold. If she gets a gold in the Olympics, then, of course, she's got the full shooting box there. Lou, it doesn't matter where you are in the world. You will be all over what's happening in New Zealand racing, and you will be just as dismayed as anyone about what is happening at Ellerslie, and news now that Pukekohe Park will be absorbing some of their pressure whilst they look to almost rebuild. What have you made of this? What are you hearing?
Well, I'm not hearing a hell of a lot, but you're right, I followed along with it, and I was watching the races the other night. And I tell you what, reading between the lines, and I can kind of talk about this with a sense of freedom because I am away from home, and I'm only following not as close, and I'm not talking to the people ins and out, so I don't really mind having an opinion on it. Not that I would, usually, as you know. It almost feels like there might have been, and just reading the quotes, there might have been a little bit of how bad was this issue last Saturday and could they have finished the meeting? And yes, there was a slip and there was a slip mark, but Jason Fulford, I read, said that he thought the track was racing beautifully. But, you know, they've got John Otham and the team and the jockeys have a duty of care to make sure that these horses and jockeys get back safely. So it's a tricky one. The track's not cooked by any means, but it's not performing what they wanted. And then obviously, Smithy, you would have seen what was happening in Sydney, and they abandoned the last of the Randwick Championships meeting because of the unbelievable downpour, and you couldn't have a bet on that track that day. That was like, so this isn't just a New Zealand problem, that was a disaster. I mean, the amount of mud being kicked up, the Godolphin blue of broadsiding that James McDonald was wearing, it looked like the Coolmore blue. You could barely see that he was riding for Godolphin. So what that got me thinking about, though, was that they ran the group ones and then they called it off. And I was thinking back to Karaka Million Night. And on Karrakamillion night, it was kind of like an open secret. There was problems out there. Horses were slipping. If you were watching the, you're watching carefully, I think it was Pendragon, like fully on, full on Tokyo drifted around the bend in the three-year-old. And, you know, they finished the night, and I know that there was discussions that night about whether they were going to carry on, and they finished the night because it was, you know, the grand reopening of New Zealand racing. The stakes money was up. They finished the group ones at Sydney, and then they call it off, and, you know, safety is paramount. Are we being fully honest about ourselves, about to ourselves, about when safety is and isn't paramount here? And is there a little bit of a something or a trend developing that you kind of get the big races out of the way, then you say, oh, we don't want to go out there anymore? And when the prize money up, you know, we might just decide to err on the side of let's get this done rather than let's all go home and come back another day. And I just did notice that. So I wonder if there needs to be something closer looked at about when they're making these decisions, who's making these decisions, how much power the stipes have versus the jockeys, versus the trainers, versus the owners, versus the administrators. And what's the process like at the moment around racing in the world? I don't know if it's just a New Zealand problem. Ellerslie will be all right. I did read that they had Jason Fulford knows exactly what he needs to do for the rest of the track. He's done it on one of the shoots, and it seems like that's the best piece of grass they've got. So they don't race there again until September. They'll solve the problem at Ellerslie, no worries. Not worried about that. But maybe there is something just to check in here about the process of calling and abandoning race meets, and are we being fully transparent with ourselves about what our motives are, if you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. I think it's of interest to note that the senior jockeys, I would imagine, hold most sway when it comes to the decision making. The last two meetings, the two horses concerned have been one been ridden by Opie Bosson, the other by Matt Cameron. So, you know, obviously the senior jockeys carry quite some sway. As I understand, James McDonald carry quite some sway on Karaka night. In terms of influencing the meeting to continue. Whilst you've been away, your Crusaders have had a magical trip, of course, to Australia, where they've lost two in a row, including an embarrassing loss to the Force. Now then, what hope do you give them against the Rebels this Friday night?
Well, they'll probably beat the New York Rugby Club that Andy Ellis used to play for. What were they called? I feel like they had a name. Rick Stolizzo set them up, didn't he? I reckon they'll beat them. Will they beat the Rebels? I mean, it's pretty messy. It's pretty bad. Like, I know they've got a bunch of young players, and I know that we've given them a lot of grace because it made a lot of sense at the start of the year why they were dropping these games, especially the derbies. But then they've played okay in pockets. Going on this road trip and dropping those two games, I think that's kind of getting, like, you kind of had your grace period over. You need to start picking up these games. And there was probably a lot of people like me thinking that they were going to slip into the playoff spot, probably an eighth or maybe even seventh. They're really bad, Smithy. It's quite disappointing. I saw that Colin Mainsbridge was tweeting that, interestingly, he's got statistics saying that there hasn't been any viewership drop-off. I just was dumbfounded by that. I couldn't believe it. Like, is that true? Is that true that Crusaders fans are still watching like they were when they were winning and we had kind of, you know, 10 All Blacks in the starting 15? I mean, if that's true, that's amazing. That's amazing cultured and kind of curated fan base we've got. But I couldn't believe it. I think anecdotally what I'm hearing from back home is there's a lot of people resigned that maybe this season we just let it go by and we're trying to try again next year. So I know it's a bit defeatist, but and it's not great fandom to be so apathetic about it. But, I mean, they're bad. They're a hard watch. If they'll beat the Rebels, I actually don't know. I assume they will, but then I assume they would have beaten the Force. I mean, that's kind of disgraceful, to be honest.
It is. It's a big talking point here, as you can imagine. As is a slight... I think a backward step by the Warriors, but hopefully they'll fix that as early as tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock New Zealand time. So so Spain is next on the agenda. So you're not there in terms of the running of the balls, are you? What are you going to do?
Hopefully not. No, I don't know if I've got the balls for that, but I think we might try and get to a Granada FC La Liga game. We're going to be in Granada. while they've got a game on. So if anybody has any sort of connections in the Andalusia part of Spain, send them my way. Otherwise, we'll be on StubHub trying to scrounge some tickets day of. But we'll make sure we get to a La Liga game for you, Smithy, and then I can start to stack all these kind of different stadium and sports atmospheres up for you as next time I dial. And also, the other thing to note, Kentucky Derby, I'm missing that by about 10 or 11 days. So that'll be run and won by the next time we chat. And as we look start looking towards Royal Ascot as the racing in this part of the world heats up as it kind of goes into the winter months back home. So we'll talk some Kentucky Derby at some point as well.
Safe travels, Louis. Great to catch up with you. Sounding real and sprightly or whatever. Just a word of advice. If you do get to Spain and see Jenny Hermoso, just shake her hand. Don't hug her or kiss her. All right?
Wow, yeah. Luis Rubiales. Luis, I have to change my name.
Okay, mate. Hey, great to catch up. Fantastic to hear you. Sounds like you're just as ebullient as ever and bubbling. So thanks for your time, mate, and continue to travel safe.
Yeah, anytime, Smithy. Talk soon. See ya.